CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, visiting professor in international security at Dickinson College and the author of Battle Tested, to take us to a question we cannot answer, perhaps not for the rest of this century. AUKUS, Australia, United Kingdom, United States, the new alliance just announced by the Biden administration, combining the strengths of the U.S. and the U.K. Navy with the positioning, the geography of Australia to contain the aggression of the People's Republic of China. Jeff, a very good evening to you. Containment. That was the genius of diplomats following the Second War confronted with the aggression of the Soviet Union, Stalin 7, a Soviet Union. And yet you served the army that believed in containment in the late 20th century until the end of the Soviet Union. The question we have today, did it work then? Does it work now? And my understanding, because you were inside containment, did you have a sense before the Soviet Union failed that you were winning the containment battle? Was there a marker we can look to the analogy to the containment of the PRC? Good evening to you, Jeff.
John, good evening to you. I think to a large degree, I would say we did believe that containment was working and of course thought it was validated when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, as did the Warsaw Pact. Certainly, I spent a large portion of my military career in Europe, and part of that containment strategy was to ensure that the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact did not expand beyond the borders that it occupied. And this was implemented not only by the presence of U.S. military forces, both air, land, and sea, but various policies we implemented throughout that period, such things as the deployment, for example, of intermediate-range nuclear weapons during the 1980s, which was enormously controversial. It was an effort to counter the increase in Soviet military power, and that was coupled, obviously, with an effort to make sure that Soviet efforts to undermine that policy politically were not successful with various groups throughout Europe. And this, I think, points out an important aspect of containment as a strategy as we think about it now being applied perhaps to China, that it's multifaceted. Yes, there's a very important military component, and the submarine sale to Australia is clearly part of that, focusing on China perhaps. But there is a political component, the unity of democracies. There's an economic component. Certainly we see that as well. There's a diplomatic component, and there's an informational component. I think what we're seeing now with AUKUS and other efforts by the United States is try to create that kind of a strategy as we confront the not only rising strength of China, but China's more outspoken efforts perhaps to change the territory throughout Asia in many, many important parts, whether it's the South China Sea, whether it's the borders with India and China, whether it's Taiwan. There are numerous examples, and I think that's why this strategy is now being applied. Whether it will be successful as it was with the Soviet Union, as you rightfully point out, John, only time will tell.
I read from the Global Times an op-ed published in these last days. This is the English language mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party, understood as hawkish. Writes the op-ed writer, the news carried a menacing announcement of a deal to, quote, support Australia in acquiring nuclear-powered submarines for the Royal Australian Navy, end quote. This immediately triggered alarm bells in many capitals of ASEAN and also in China. Why, Jeff? Why alarm bells? They have been aggressive, and they boast about it, their aggression. So what is the surprise here? Were they caught strategically ignorant?
No, I don't think they were necessarily caught strategically ignorant, perhaps tactically ignorant. And they're right, though, that the many nations that surround them all, by and large, seek stability, obviously want to avoid war. But clearly, at the same time, they are concerned by Chinese, as you rightfully point out, aggressive efforts that seem to be, if you will, striking at that particular status quo and that particular stability. And articles such as you just described coming from the Chinese press are part of that informational response, not only internationally. They want to make sure that Japanese citizens may be concerned that China is worried, or Thai or Vietnamese or Indian or whatever. But they also need to do that for home consumption as they try to rally the population, perhaps seek greater defense spending, as they move on in the future. So it's part of that informational strategy of their response as they worry that this may be an effort to constrain them. And they talk as well about such things as damage to regional security, arms races, and the like. And we can expect more of that I think, as time goes on.
The Chinese are complaining that the U.S. is breaking the peace or challenging the peace or ignoring the negotiation and dialogue. The puzzle for me, Jeff, reporting these many years, what peace? China's aggression towards India is extant. We can see it in the deployment of troops in the Himalayas. And I can go on. You and I can go around the region and see China bullying people, but no more bullying than directed at Australia. It's puzzling to me. They're even crude enough to say that the Australians will be the first to die. Why are they acting so badly, Jeff? They're acting profoundly threatened. This was an alliance, a defensive alliance, not launching missiles.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And as we've discussed before, John, a number of years ago, I did a book called The Other Special Relationship about the U.S.-Australian relationship. And in working with the Australians on that, they were very adamant, and this is a decade or more ago, about the one thing the Australians wanted to avoid was being forced to choose between the United States and China, because China was such a tremendous economic relationship for them in terms of raw materials. Really, the success of the Australian economy, they thought in many ways, would depend on that bilateral trade relationship. So the Australians, based on the aggression you rightfully point out, have made, you know, an enormous strategic choice. They have now chosen, even though they said they did never wanted to choose. So I think one politician in Australia called this the biggest strategic gamble in Australian history. But as you say, again, in terms of threatening stability and peace in the region, whether it's their Chinese threats to India, whether it's the South China Sea, and all these countries realize the enormous importance of the South China Sea as a transit point for trade, and now the Chinese trying to make that into a, if you will, Chinese lake, or whether you're Taiwan, there are numerous examples of Chinese aggression physically and the rhetoric to back it up, which they call this so-called wolf diplomacy, or being a lot more aggressive, not only in their policy, but how they describe their policies.
The success of this is many years in the future, but right now, what are you watching, Jeff, to see? Because the submarines cannot be built for many years. In the meantime, the UK and the US must provide, I guess, what you'd call transition attack submarines out of Perth. So what are you watching for? What told you that you were doing well in the first containment against the Soviets?
Well, we'll look for how the Chinese respond militarily, very specifically in certain areas. One of the weaknesses is most people believe of the Chinese military right now is they are not very advanced in terms of anti-submarine warfare. So in the next several years, we start seeing the Chinese making more and more investments in aircraft or long sea surveillance, more acoustic devices to search for submarines, and trying to fill that void. That will be an interesting response. Secondly, I think will we see the Chinese continue this rhetoric and translate that into more physical efforts, if you will. Will there be more threats on the Chinese-India border, for example? Will there be more efforts to interrupt a flow of commercial products through the South China Sea? Or perhaps conversely, might the Chinese now decide that to try a tactic of cooperation? And that, of course, would be, should they come together with the United States, as some have suggested, and now negotiate an end to the Korean War and use that as a precursor then to go on to negotiate about denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula, because China would have to be a participant in ending that particular war formally because they're part of the treaty process. And then last but not least, how the Chinese move commercially as well. Again, containment having an economic component. They have, curiously enough, now sought to enter the comprehensive and progressive TPP agreement on tariffs and protection in the Indo-Pacific area. 11 nations have formalized that agreement on trade, very important economically in the region. Of course, the United States stepped away from TPP in 2017 at the direction of then-President Trump. Will the Chinese be able to make an inroad there economically? Probably not, because the Australians will likely block it. Or might the Biden administration now, in a further effort to contain China, seek to re-enter TPP and be part of that process? Those will be some of the things I'll be watching for.
And Jeff, in the final 30 seconds, it's three, UK, US, Australia. That doesn't mean it can't be four or five. Is that a fair assumption, Jeff? We can add.
Absolutely. absolutely fair assumption. Don't forget, at one time it was Australia, the UK, the United States, and New Zealand were in an alliance. But it is interesting, we have a North American country, a European country, and clearly an Asian country all coming together to deter and contain China.
I would like to see an invitation go immediately to Paris and another one to Tokyo, but we'll see. Jeff McCausland, who is the visiting professor of international security for Dickinson College and Colonel U.S. Army, retired CBS News. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.